This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
نحمده ونستعين ونستغفره ونؤمن به نتوكل عليه ونعوذ بالله من شرور أنفسنا ومن سيئات أعمالنا من يهده الله فلا مضل له ومن يضلل فلا هادي له أما بعد فقد قال الله تعالى في القرآن المجيد بعد أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم ولوطا إذ قال لقومه أتأتون الفاحشة ما سبقكم بها بأمن أحد من العالمين إنكم لتأتون الرجال شهوة من دون النساء بل أنتم قوم مسرفون وما كان جواب قوم إلا أن قالوا أخرجوهم من قريتكم إنهم أناس يتطهرون. The stories mentioned in the Quran, and specifically the stories of the prophets, contain timeless wisdom that we can benefit from no matter how many centuries we live after the time of the prophets. And when you look at the stories in the Quran and the topics they focus on, sometimes it feels as if the Quran was revealed for now, as if it was revealed to tackle contemporary issues. And one of those stories that directly addresses a problem that is arising in the world today is the story of the Prophet Lut alayhi salam. So for today's khutbah, very briefly, we will go over the story of Prophet Lut alayhi salam and extract some lessons from it and offer some advice based on the story for dealing with contemporary issues. To begin the story, Lut alayhi salam was the nephew of Prophet Ibrahim alayhi salam. So when Prophet Ibrahim alayhi salam first began to preach Islam, when he first began to preach the message of Tawheed, only two people believed in him, Sarah and Lut. He married Sarah and they left the city and they went on their story that would, inshallah, we'll probably cover that in Zulhijjah, because Zulhijjah is linked to the story of Prophet Ibrahim alayhi salam. But his nephew Lut also had to leave the city as the only believer there. And he also became a prophet and he was sent to a different city to preach Islam in that city. Now, Lut alayhi salam, one thing that's unique about his story is that it's mentioned with the stories of the perished nations, right? Of the nations that were destroyed for their sins. But it's the only one not mentioned with the name of the city. It's a very interesting point. When you read the stories of the perished nations in Surah Al-A'raf, Surah Hud, Surah Shu'ara, every city is mentioned by name besides one. So we have the city of Ad that received the Prophet Hud alayhi salam. The city of Thamud that received the Prophet Salih alayhi salam. The city of Madian that received the Prophet Shu'aib alayhi salam. And then we have Qawm Lut, the people that Lut was sent to. No city is mentioned by name, for this group only. And the scholars mention multiple reasons why the city is not mentioned by name. One is because people were already familiar with the name. So if you look at the stories of Hud and Salih and Shu'aib, these are stories not found in other religions. So, you know, this was new information for the people. But the story of Lut alayhi salam is well known to Jews and Christians, and the names of the cities are well known in the Bible, right? The cities of Sodom and Gomorrah, which is where the word sodomy comes from. And these names were already known to the people. Another reason mentioned is that the crime or the sin of the people of Lut was so severe and so disgusting in the sight of Allah that he didn't even want to mention them by name, not even the city by name. Like, they didn't deserve to be mentioned by name at all. This is an explanation given by some of the early scholars for why the name of the city is left out. That their crime was so abhorrent to the Creator, that what they had done. So we know that every prophet that was sent to a community, that community had a specific crime or sin that was unique to them, and brought about the azab of Allah. And with the people of Lut alayhi salam, there were multiple crimes, but one stands out. There's one that's mentioned over and over again in the Quran explicitly. And nowadays, there's a group of people who are trying to hide these verses or reinterpret these verses or spin the meaning of these verses, but the verses are very clear. And I'll try to be as polite as possible in translating these verses, because there's children here. But nonetheless, listen to the message of Lut alayhi salam to his people. Lut alayhi salam said, وَلُوتًا إِذْ قَالَ لِقَوْمِ أَتَأْتُونَ الْفَاحِشَةَ مَا سَبَقَكُمْ بِهَا مِنْ أَحَدٍ مِنَ الْعَالَمِينَ. When Lut told his people, You are committing an immorality that no one before you in the history of this world has ever done. So the first point we learn is that the crime of the people of Lut alayhi salam was a fahisha. It was a sexual immorality. It was something of a immoral nature. The word fahisha is used. The second thing we learn is that they were the first people in history to do this. They were the first people in history to commit this crime. Right? The sin. Then he explains what the sin is. And he's so explicit, it's ridiculous that there are people today trying to reinterpret these verses because the verses are so explicit and clear. He says, إِنَّكُمْ لَتَأْتُونَ الرِّجَالَ شَهْوَةً مِنْ دُونِ النِّسَاءِ. You are fulfilling your desires on men instead of women. بَلْ أَنْتُمْ قَوْمٌ مُسْرِفُونَ. You have exceeded all bounds. So very clear, the crime of the people of Lut was that they fulfilled their sensual desires on men instead of women. Homosexuality was the crime of the people of Lut alayhi salam. Now, we know today some people have tried to reinterpret this. And if you really have to look at the verses and try to fit in the reinterpretation, it makes it really bizarre. Because what the modern groups are trying to say is that this surah is not talking about homosexuality. They say it's talking about rape. Now, does that make any sense? If you're fulfilling your desires on men instead of women. If it's talking about rape, what would be the conclusion of that verse? I don't want to say it. Just think about it. How bizarre that sounds. Right? How ridiculous that sounds. It's not. It's talking about actual, you know, consensual intimacy. So this verse is very clear. It's very explicit. And if you open any book of tafsir written in the past 1,400 years, they all have the exact same explanation for this verse. There is no two opinions. There is no difference of opinion. There's no room for interpretation. This is a matter of ijma. It is a matter of consensus. Every school of thought, every madhab, even across Sunni and Shia lines, there is consensus that this is something that is prohibited. It's not even something like one school of thought has a different opinion. There has always been a consensus in Islam that this kind of relationships that are being promoted today in the West is haram. Right? Our religion makes it very clear, the only kind of intimate relationship that's allowed is between a man and his wife. Right? In the only type of intimate relation that's allowed is in marriage between a man and his wife. Right? In terms of modern terms. All these other modern relationships are clearly prohibited in the Quran. And the people of Lut responded, مَا كَانَ جَوَابَكُمْ إِلَّا أَنْ قَالُوا أَخْرِجُوهُمْ مِنْ قَرْيَتِكُمْ إِنَّهُمْ أُنَاسُ يَتَطَهَّرُونَ. His people said, kick him out of the city because these people want to be pure. So his people tried to expel him from the city for his crime, يَتَطَهْرُونَ. He wants to live a chaste life. He wants to live a modest life. And by the way, society is moving in that direction. Society today is moving in that direction where 20 years ago they called for gay rights. Now they're calling for forcing you to teach your children about it. 20 years time, you'll be a criminal for not being gay. They're moving in that direction where before you know it, they'll want to kick us out for being unasu yatataharun, for people who want to be pure. In another surah, Surah Shu'ara, again it's mentioned very explicitly, أَتَأَتُونَ الزُّكُرَانَ مِنَ الْعَالَمِينَ. Are you lusting after the men of the world? وَتَذَرُونَ مَا خَلَقَ لَكُمْ رَبُّكُمْ مِنْ أَزْوَاجِكُمْ. And you are casting aside those whom Allah created to be your wives. وَالْأَنْتُمْ قَوْمٌ عَادُونَ. You are people who have gone astray. You are people who have transgressed all boundaries. Again, how much more explicit can the Quran get? أَتَأْتُونَ الزُّكُرَانَ مِنَ الْعَالَمِينَ. You are lusting after the men of the world. For a man to desire a man in that way is something that is prohibited, to act on such desires. And the third place where the message of Lut is mentioned, Surah Naml, the very next surah, again the same message. وَلُوتًا إِذْ قَالَ لِقَوْمِهِ أَتَأْتُونَ الْفَاحِشَةَ وَأَنْتُمْ تُبْصِرُونَ. When Lut said to his people, are you committing immorality while watching each other? So this is another crime that the community did, that they would actually do these sins openly in front of each other, right? It wasn't even done behind closed doors. إِنَّكُمْ لَتَأْتُونَ الرِّجَالَ شَهْوَةً مِنْ دُونِ النِّسَاءِ. Again, very, very clear. No room for reinterpretation. إِنَّكُمْ لَتَأْتُونَ الرِّجَالَ شَهْوَةً مِنْ دُونِ النِّسَاءِ. Are you fulfilling your desires on men instead of women? Are you fulfilling your desires on men instead of women? بَلْ أَنْتُمْ قَوْمٌ تَجْحَلُونَ. But you people are ignorant. وَمَا كَانَ جَوَابَ قَوْمِ إِلَّا أَنْ قَالُوا أَخْرِجُوا آلَ لُوتٍ مِنْ قَرْيَتِكُمْ إِنَّهُمْ أُنَاسٌ يَتَطَهَّرُونَ. And again, the same line is repeated from the other surah. These people's response was simply, kick Lut and his family out. These people want to be pure. So the story of Lut alayhi salam continues, and it says that for years he tried preaching to his people. He tried to get them to come back to the straight path, and the straight path here we mean straight, like, you know, even in the other sense of the word straight, and they didn't want to listen. And then eventually Allah sent his azab, but it came in a very unique way. The azab of Allah comes in a very unique way to these people. And Allah sends three angels in the form of handsome young men. And these angels go and visit Ibrahim alayhi salam. And he serves them food. They don't eat the food. He realizes they're angels. And he asks them what they're doing. And they say they're going to destroy the people of Lut. And Ibrahim alayhi salam's wife starts to laugh. Right? That finally these people are getting what they deserve. Right? She starts to laugh. And Ibrahim alayhi salam tells, you know, give them a chance, give them time to repent. And he said, it's too late. Allah's azab has come. Right? So they go to the city. And Lut alayhi salam, when he sees these young men, he realizes that the men of the city are going to try and molest these men. So he tries to hide these young men from the people of the city. And his wife betrays him and tells the people of the city that we have these men in our home, come and do what you want to them. Right? So this is where the other angle comes in. Right? Where they were literally, for these three men, they were trying to force themselves on them. And so this is when the men reveal themselves to be angels, and they destroy the city, leaving only Lut alayhi salam and his family, except his wife. They punished his wife as well. The entire city were destroyed, including the wife of Lut alayhi salam. And in here, multiple lessons. Number one, you know, people say, what's the big deal? The big deal is that this is something so sinful in the sight of God that he destroyed a nation for it and mentioned the story multiple times in the Quran. Right? If this was a small thing, if this was something normal, if this was something that, you know, it's okay, no big deal about it, why would Allah mention a story in the Quran of him destroying an entire community for this? And he mentioned the story over and over again in multiple surahs. If you look at Surah Naml, he doesn't even mention the story of the other perished nations. He doesn't mention Ad or Samud or Majan. It only mentions the story of Suleiman and the story of Lut. Right? So this story is mentioned more times than the other perished nations. And it's made very clear what their crime was. It's made very clear what their sin was. And we have to mention this today, because there is a strong movement today to change the religion. You see, throughout history, there have always been people who commit these sins. And there have always been people who had these inclinations. But if it was something private, and they knew it was a sin, they committed a sin in private, that was between them and Allah. What we have today is two bigger problems. Number one is they made this an identity. They made it their identity. So it's not just a sin, it's their identity, it's who they are. This is something new. People never made these identities before. Right? To build your entire identity on who you're attracted to, it's a very bizarre and new thing in human history. Number two, and this is the worst part, this is the biggest problem that we face today. People are trying to change the religion. This is where the biggest problem comes in. You see, if someone's committing a sin in private, that's between them and Allah. But when someone is trying to change the religion of Allah, if someone is saying, oh, there's room for interpretation, oh, there's a new meaning to that verse, oh, your understanding is outdated, there's a new interpretation of the surah. When people are now trying to change the meaning of the Quran to suit their own desires, this is not just a sin, this is now stepping into the level of kufr, of leaving the fold of Islam, of messing with Allah's law, of messing with Allah's words. And this is a very dangerous problem that is now starting to spread amongst the younger generation. Our younger generation are growing up in a world where these types of relationships are normalized. In every movie, in every TV series, in every cartoon, in every video game, these things are normalized. And they're normalized to such a level that the kids grow up, if you don't teach them what Islam says on these topics, if you don't have conversations with your kids, if you don't sit your son down and explain to them what's the natural way and what's expected of them when they grow up, that you as a boy should be attracted to girls and you should marry a woman, and we expect you to get married to a woman one day and to have children one day. This is the natural way. If you don't have these conversations with your kids, and they're absorbing these movies and they're absorbing these TV series and they're going to non-Muslim schools and being indoctrinated with this, then we're going to have a big problem 5-10 years down the line. Because we'll have a generation who won't even think this is wrong. We'll have a generation who won't even think this is wrong. And we've seen this already with other sins, right? Because remember, this comes at the tail end, or maybe in the middle, of a series of other sins that were halalized over time. It starts back in the 1960s, where people started fighting for their rights to fornicate, right? And we thought that will never spread to the Muslim community, you know, that this is just something that the non-Muslims are doing. But now, in our community, zina is normal amongst the youth. You know, people don't even bat an eyelid when they hear somebody committed zina. It's become so normalized that this culture has become completely normalized. And it's haram, it's a major sin, but people don't think of it as that anymore. And this is a continuation of that, because what happened in the West is first they normalized fornication, then they normalized adultery, then they went to gay rights, then they went to lesbian rights, then they're going to transgender rights. We don't know what's coming next. Right? I have 3 or 4 ideas in mind. I don't even want to mention them, right? Because kids may be traumatized when they hear them. But there's a lot of more filthy things down the line that they're going to try and normalize. And this is a slippery slope going deeper and deeper into immorality. And as Muslims, we have to be clear what our moral boundaries are. So it's important that every Muslim knows that these kind of intimate relationships are only allowed between husband and wife. And the natural way is for a man to be attracted to a woman and to marry a woman. And that these other kind of relationships are sinful. If somebody is committing this sin and admitting that it's a sin, they're still a Muslim, but they're committing a sin. If somebody is trying to change the religion, they're now overstepping the boundaries. And they're now stepping into very dangerous territory. And this is something that's important for us to repeat. It's something that needs to be taught to our children. The story of Lut alayhi salam is something every Muslim home should be familiar with. It's something that should be preached on every minbar. It's something that should be taught in every Muslim school. The Islamic norms when it comes to intimacy should be something our teenagers should be learning, so that they are not confused by the messages being put upon them by the broader society. We ask Allah to guide us. We ask Allah to protect us. We ask Allah to purify us. We ask Allah to allow our tongues to speak only that which is true. Subhan rabbika rabbil izzati amma yasifun. Wassalamu ala mursaleen. Walhamdulillahi rabbil alameen. الحمد لله وحده والصلاة والسلام على من لا نبي بعد أما بعد فإن أصدق الحديث كتاب الله وخير حدي حدي محمد صلى الله عليه وسلم والشر الأمور محدثاتها وكل محدثة بدعة وكل بدعة ضلالة وكل ضلالة في النار. It's important for us to understand this topic from multiple angles, and so inshallah this won't be the last khutbah on this topic. We will discuss it from other perspectives in later khutbahs this month, but couple more points I want to mention today. The wife of Lut alayhi salam is specifically singled out in the Quran as an example of the disbeliever. Right? Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in Surah Tahrim, He specifically says the example of the disbeliever is the wife of Nuh and the wife of Lut. The wife of Lut alayhi salam, what was her crime? She was not a homosexual, she was not a lesbian. Her crime was she was their ally. She supported them. She said they had the right to do it. Right? She wanted them to enjoy all of this. She didn't see anything wrong with what they were doing. And just for being their ally, she also was punished by Allah. She also faced the same punishment as them. And so what this teaches us is that as Muslims, we cannot ally with immorality. We cannot be allies to immoral movements. A fundamental of our religion that's mentioned in the Quran, as you know, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, you are the best of people brought forth for mankind. Why? You're the best of people brought forth for mankind. تَأْمُرُونَ النَّاسَ بِالْمَعْرُوفِ وَتَنْحُونَ عَنِ الْمُنْكَرِ. That you command people what is good and you forbid what is evil. This is a fundamental of being a Muslim. That we forbid what is evil and we command what is good. And we are reaching a point in history where Muslims are now the only ones left who are prohibiting what is evil and promoting what is good in this area. Other religions are trying to change their scriptures. You know, they're trying to accommodate. They're trying to hide the story, erase it from their scriptures. In reality, if you had to be honest with yourself, right? And this I would say to any non-Muslim as are watching this, be honest with yourself in your scripture. You'll find that these type of relationships are prohibited in every religion. Every religion. It's not just Islam. Every religion prohibits these type of relationships. The problem is, over time, people adjusted their scriptures to accommodate the masses. And Islam, we're not allowed to do that. Our religion is from Allah. And we are responsible for conveying the message of Allah and protecting the message of Allah and commanding what is right and forbidding what is evil. So yes, sometimes that will mean that we will be the minority. But we need to stick to what is right. Finally, one last point for today. People ask, what's the harm? Right, this is the question. They say, what's the harm? It's two people, it's their private business, they're consenting adults. How does it harm you? Well, there are multiple harms to the broader society when these things are normalized. You see, if two people did a sin in private and they accepted it as a sin and nobody knows they did it besides them, yes, that is their own business between them and Allah. Right? They should make tawbah, that's their private business. But when people are celebrating these things and they're proud of these things and they're displaying it in public, this corrupts every level of society. And what we are seeing in the modern world today now, we are seeing marriage falling apart. We are seeing divorce rates skyrocketing. We have the largest number of unmarried people in their 40s and 30s who will never get married. We have children growing up not knowing who their fathers are. We have children who are completely confused about every aspect of their lineage. They don't know who their fathers are, who their grandfathers are, who their great-grandfathers are. It's a complete mess. Right? We have people who are suicidal and depressed because they are confused about who they are and what their purpose in life is. When you mess with the family system, the natural family system that Allah created, when you mess with that, it has ripple effects throughout society. And Allah created a very simple system that works. He created men and women to be attracted to each other. That attraction leads to marriage. Marriage leads to children. The children are raised by a mother and a father, both of whom play their role in raising those children. Those children grow up well, and this continues for generations and generations. Anywhere down the line, you break that up with something else, you bring in something different, it's going to have ripple effects, not just on the individual, but on the entire family. And when these things are done publicly, they have major effects on the entire community. So, we ask Allah to protect our children and the next generation from these people who are trying to change the religion and from being brainwashed by the broader society. We ask Allah to protect us and allow us to understand the religion in its proper context. We ask Allah to guide our hearts. We ask Allah to change the tide of the world back in favor of morality, to end this wave of immorality that's spreading across the world. We ask Allah to give us the strength to speak that which is true. And we ask Allah to give us the strength to believe in that which is true and to stand by that which is true, even if we're the only ones doing so. رَبَّنَا آتِنَا فِي الدُّنْيَا حَسَنَةً وَفِي الْآخِرَةِ حَسَنَةً وَقِنَا عَذَابَ النَّارِ رَبَّنَا هَبْ لَنَا مِنْ أَزْوَاجِنَا وَذُرِّيَّاتِنَا قُرَّةَ أَعْيُنٍ اجْعَل لَّنَا لِلْمُتَّقِينَ إِمَامًا سُبْحَانَ رَبِّكَ رَبِّ الْعِزَّةِ عَمَّا يَصِفُونَ وَسَلَامٌ عَلَى الْمُرْسَلِينَ وَالْحَمْدُ لِلَّهِ رَبِّ الْعَالَمِينَ. أَقِيمِ الصَّلَاةَ.